seems something is not set right here. Hold on. This week on Dueling Review, we take a look at Amazing Spider-Man number 789. Down on your luck, Peter Parker is back, for good or ill. New York has changed and so has Peter, but entering a new phase of his Spider-Man life isn't easy. Neither are new relationships or new foes. Peter Parker is not the Spider-Man you remember, but why is he taking his fight to the Daily Bugle? And what happened to Parker Industries? I have not read Amazing Spider-Man in a while, since the dome went up. So that's been a while.
Yeah, but at least 9 months.
How did Peter Parker lose Parker Industries? Because you know he's not an incompetent like everyone in the newspapers is saying he is.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I haven't read anything that is a Secret Empire crossover very closely.
Oh, you think it has something to do with Secret Empire?
Yeah, well, that's what the dome was. It was part of Secret Empire. When Captain America took over the world, he trapped Manhattan under an impenetrable dome.
Yeah.
And that kept most of the street-level heroes out of play. Spider-Man, of course, was in Hong Kong and ended up fighting with Superior Spider-Octopus, who came back, knew all of his secrets, took over the company. And that, I think, is why he had to torpedo his whole company.
Ah.
But I'm not sure.
Well, so the last story arc had Peter Parker and Norman Osborn going at each other. And the issue previous to this one was Amazing Spider-Man number 32.
Right.
That has Osborn traveling in the Himalayas trying to learn enlightenment and everything. And it's kind of trippy and weird. And it shows that he's really got the Green Goblin still inside of him and everything. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting story. This one is Amazing Spider-Man 789, and I know people are like, what happened to 788? Hey, guess what? Amazing Spider-Man number 32. This is all part of the Marvel Legacy renumbering.
Yeah, Marvel claims that they counted up all the issues of Amazing Spider-Man to date, and that if you read Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3, and there may have actually been a Volume 4, but if you read them all in order, there would be 788 issues, and this would be the next issue in the order.
And interestingly, this is, even though it's called The Fall of Peter Parker, and it's the first part of this.
Right.
This is like a reset, which is weird because Dan Slott has been writing Spider-Man for a decade.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And so for this issue to feel like, hey, we're resetting Peter Parker to be a poor schlub down on his luck, sleeping on somebody's couch, Mockingbird's couch.
Right.
And we have there's no indicator anywhere in at least in the previous issue, how he ended up on her couch, how they're dating, and why they're making out at the end of the issue.
Well,
spoiler alert.
They were dating or quasi-dating or interested in dating in Amazing Spider-Man before Secret Empire.
Ah, okay.
Because she was working for him at Parker Industries and there was a flirtation, but I was not aware until this issue that they were actually following through on it.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's Dan Slott, right? I mean, he's got things mapped out and things in place and all that stuff.
And like Laurie Jaspasek said to Dan Dreiberg, sometimes the costumes do make it better.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it's Peter spends the entire issue just getting beat up left and right. He opens the newspaper and Joe Robertson down at the Daily Bugle has just written a scathing story on how incompetent he is and why the
Parker
industry...
threat or menace.
Yes, which I thought was great. So Peter goes down and he starts yelling at him. And Joe's like, hey, look, millions of people lost their jobs. People, bought all your stuff that doesn't work now. Working class men and women are without health care, et cetera, et cetera. You're Ben, Ben Foundation.
No different than your Aunt May and Uncle Ben. And your Uncle Ben Foundation has no money. And
yeah, and
you
so,
suck, you suck, and you also suck.
And so
suck,
Peter's like, yeah,
Peter.
Okay, I guess I do. And then there's this really weird page where as he's leaving, he looks at the tech reporter's computer and he's like, oh, no, you got this wrong. Here's what's really going on with the PIM particle stuff. You need to change this, this, and this. And then the tech guy's like, that's really interesting. And then Joe's like, yes, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
You know why?
Why?
Foreshadowing, my friend, is an important literary technique and your clue to quality literature.
Well, I know
Peter
that
Parker
this
is going to get his job back at the Daily Bugle, well, working for Joe Robinson as the new tech guy.
That's what I think, but the way Joe looks and the way he's drawn in that final panel, it's like, is Joe evil too? Is he going to, because didn't his son turn into Hobgoblin?
No, his son, I think, well, no, maybe, I don't know. But I think what we're supposed to read from that is a subtle indication on Joe's face that he realizes that he can help Peter turn it around rather than Joe being an evil thing. But now that I look at that panel, Eminem's facial features there could also be pure evil.
Yeah.
I do love the fact that his Joe Robinson looks like Robert Guillaume.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Sports Night?
I remember I remember Benson and Soap.
Well, yeah. Same guy.
Yeah, no. I know who he is.
It's a different guy.
Robert Guillaume? No, he's the same guy. He's always been the same guy. It's not like suddenly there was a Robert Guillaume and he was like, you know what? I don't want to be Robert Guillaume anymore. And they're like, okay, you guy, you can be Robert Guillaume. And he's like, okay, I'll be Robert Guillaume. That's not how that works.
Yeah. And then 20 years later, he's like, Isaac at Sports Night.
That only works in wrestling.
And comics.
I guess, maybe a little bit.
Remember how Flash Thompson used to be a bully and now he's ex-Venom? And
yes.
An American hero.
Yes. And he's lost both his legs and all that stuff. So everybody's kind of like tries to have a pity party for Peter. And he's like not having any of that. And then Mockingbird's like, hey, let's go out and let's fight some crime. And they run into the Griffin. And the Griffin's like, you know what? I did all those robberies because I wanted stuff. And I did bank robberies to get the money to buy the stuff that I wanted. He's like, I'm skipping that step. I'm just going right to the stuff that I want. So it's interesting because of the dome. And I don't know what happened. What was going on inside the dome, but apparently life was pretty bleak, almost
you had no resources.
Well, it was almost like what was going on in the DC when they had that horrible series that we followed through to the bitter end.
Battle for Bloodhaven.
No, not
Countdown
Battle.
To,
no, it was the one.
Infinite Crisis.
It's the one where everyone, all the alternate realities were covered in a dome.
Convergence?
And Convergence, that's it.
No,
and
it
a lot of that
Convergence.
Yeah, it was because there was on the Convergence planet, all those cities were underneath, and they had the same thing. They had resource problems.
First, never make me remember Convergence. I thought we had a deal. And second, the difference between this and Convergence is that this was almost readable. I didn't
read it, so I don't know. But
the Secret Empire stuff was.
So it's interesting that we're going to see in this. Basically, again, I want to say it's a reset, not a reboot, but a reset. We're seeing villains taking different approaches to how they approach their crimes. We see Peter Parker down on his luck again. We see Aunt May just kind of coasting along, and we're seeing a lot of Spider-Man's friends showing back up. We got Betty. We got
Liz
Mary
and
Jane,
Harry are back together.
Liz and Harry. We've got, as you said, Flash is there as well. And so it's like the whole gang's back together. I don't know what happened to the all new, all different, all married Spider-Mans. Renew Your Vow.
That's
happened between him and Mary Jane?
Separate alternate reality.
Oh, okay. What happened to him and Mary Jane? Are they no longer together?
In that separate alternate reality, they're off together.
But I mean like
he and
in
Mary,
this one.
He and Mary Jane have not been together in this one forever.
Oh, okay.
They were never actually married, according to Marvel, at one point.
Okay.
They were just in a serious long-term relationship that ended badly. Because she sold their marriage to the devil.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, this isn't a horrible story.
No.
It's very enjoyable. It is readable. I think it's approachable to new readers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions that are not answered inside that front cover, which is where I usually get caught up on. I mean, they do try to do a good job of saying, hey, you know, some evil forces were trying to take over. And so Peter had to scuttle his own company. And it's like, well, how do you scuttle your own company? Did he sell off the stock? Did he, you know, did he go on national television and say a bad word? Did he?
That's not important.
Well, maybe it is, because why all of a sudden does everyone hate Peter Parker?
Because it's Marvel, and Marvel believes that if Spider-Man wins for more than 10 issues at a time, that they're not doing their job. They feel that they have to give us a loser schlub Spider-Man every once in a while. You'll remember when Big Time started and Spider-Man launched his own company and was doing really well, and everybody was like, no, this is not real Spider-Man. Spider-Man is a schlub. Spider-Man can't ever win. Hard Luck Parker is the only Spider-Man that is true and real and good. And then 4 years the line.
Don't get me started on this stuff.
4 years down the line, they've now said, okay, we're going to go back to that after 4 years of doing something else. And now we're going to have people going, no, you're bad and wrong. There's only one true Spider-Man.
Yeah, the one true thing kind of bothered me this week because over in the Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne had proposed to Selina Kyle.
Right.
Tom King writing that. We had a very long break. Because they were telling the battle between Joker and the Riddler. And so they came back this week and were like, oh, yeah, so she says yes, and they're going to go ahead and get engaged and everything moving forward. And someone just laid into King just like, you know, the Batman works best when he's by himself, and it should be this way, and you're ruining everything about Batman. And it's like, no, you're not, dude. He's telling a story, and he's evolving the character, and it's that, I don't know, it's the toxicity. Yeah. Around the one true, and this is the way it ought to be, and this is the way it was when I was a kid, and get politics out of my comics, and this was this way when I was your age. And it's like, okay, first of all, if you're talking about fashion trends, and that's the big hang-up that you have to realize that fashion has changed over the last 60 years. So if you're going back and reading an old Peter Parker issue, and he's wearing a bow tie, that's because it's fashion, not because somebody's like, oh, that's the one true Peter Parker, and that's the way he's going to lock in his fashion sense forever and a day. If you're if you're worried about politics, go back and read the first issue of Action Comics number one. Go back and read The Yellow Kid, for God's sake.
Go back and read anything. I mean, the thing that we get into, and I think that this is a problem not just on the side of the people reading and, you know, consuming. I hate the term consuming, but the people who are absorbing the media that we're creating, is that they feel like it should never change. So when things do change, everybody hates it, and change is also bad. But once that is set in stone, and the example that I always use is Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan dies in 1995. Half the audience goes, oh, this is terrible and bad. Kyle Rayner comes in. He's Green Lantern for the next 12, 15 years. When Hal Jordan comes back, Kyle Rayner gets sidelined. People are like, oh, no, this is terrible and bad. Everybody gets to a point where they like what they like, and that's understandable. But that doesn't give you... You know, that doesn't give you dominion over this stuff. It doesn't mean that your way is right. When I was growing up, Spider-Man wore a ridiculous black suit. It was ridiculous. I still kind of like it, especially donned by Mark Bagley every once in a while. But there are things about the comics that I grew up with that I still, you know, like Iron Man's Mark 7 Silver Centurion armor. I love that. I will argue that that is better looking than any armor since. But I also don't not read Iron Man because he's not in that suit. I don't not read Iron Man because Iron Man has been just an endless cycle of schmageggy for the last 2 years.
Well, what I'm getting at is there's this toxicity of, okay, this is Spider-Man is not owned by readers or the fans. And you may not like something. Someone is having a complete fit because Spider-Man is wearing Mockingbird to Ask Me About My Feminist Agenda t-shirt for the first half of this issue.
This is the first time that actually appears in an issue.
Right.
It was a sight gag on the cover, of Mockingbird number 8 that never appeared in the comic book.
But the point is that fans don't own these characters. Never have, never will. And there is this toxicity about any time we're trying to make some change to a character or try to introduce a new concept or a new idea, or heaven forbid, we're trying to bring in some potential new readers to a series who might find out that they love Spider-Man just as much as you do.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff really is getting old, tiresome, and bothers me to no end, to the point where I had to preemptively mute a bunch of people today because of their antics that they were doing online.
Oh, I agree. If you go and read the first 50 issues of Spider-Man...
I'm actually looking forward to reading the first 100 issues of Spider-Man.
I wouldn't go 100.
Well, only because there's that great... I have the cover for issue 100 hanging up on the wall.
100 is a great cover. It's not a great issue. I believe that's a six-arm Spider-Man issue. But when you get into those first 6 years, from 1961 to about 1968, so 7-8 years of Marvel Comics, change is constant and it comes at you mm-hmm. fast. Mm-hmm. And it is just huge. And about 1968, everything crystallizes and it stops changing. And that's when the comic time really kicks in, because you'll note that Franklin Richards was born and aged up to the age of 4 or 5 in those first 8 years of the Marvel Universe. And he's been between 5 and 12, vacillating back and forth ever since. And when we get to the point where Peter Parker went from being a 16-year-old high school sophomore or whatever to being in college, at ESU, yeah. in the first 50 issues of Spider-Man, and there's a lot of change and a lot of different things going on, what it all comes down to is that people are thinking about these comics and going, this is the way it's always been. It hasn't always been that way.
Right, right.
And the Marvel Universe especially was very, very dynamic until the 70s hit. And then the 70s kind
of... Yeah, so again, I've mentioned this book again. It's the Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, by Sean Howe. It's really good. It. No, honestly, Matthew, this thing has annotations. It shows where everything comes from. And he even points out, well, you cannot trust it, but I'm saying that everything is cited where it comes from. And he goes, in places where things are not cited, I was doing one-on-one interviews with these people. So this is pretty solid. But there is a section where they talk about the things that were going on in the 70s and late 70s, early 80s that kind of stagnated everything, and the reason why the company did that. And it had to do with marketing towards other media. Stan was trying to get out to Hollywood and do things the Hollywood way. And then you had this rise of, and we talked about this before, and I think it bears a longer discussion in other places, but the rise of comic fans becoming the comic creators and wanting to play and tell those stories that they remember as kids again and again and again. And so that's where that starts to happen and why that happens. And it's covered very well in this book. And I would encourage you to either read it or get the audiobook, because the audiobook is fantastic. The only thing that I wish that they could have done is actually had some of the people actually saying some of the lines. But it talks about the whole, you know, it goes into the problems that was going on. And then, of course, just the changes in the political structure of the United States was mm-hmm. causing Marvel to rethink who they were targeting with their comics. And some of the underlying messages and things that they maybe didn't want their characters to be too radicalized in a time where a Cold War was coming up in hot and heavy, and you don't want your characters doing those kinds of things, also kind of influenced this. So there's a lot of things going on that, you're right, stagnate, not just Marvel, and listeners who are still with us who are wondering what the hell we're talking about. It's not just Marvel that's that way. You know, DC Comics suffers the same problem. And I would agree with you that all companies suffer this. And the one that is probably the biggest sufferer of that was Archie Comics until about 5-10 years ago, when they started introducing some new characters, some new art styles, and then they just let people go wild with their properties. And you don't have to have Archie always wearing an A sweater, and you don't have to have Jughead always wearing the crown. They can do different things.
Archie wore an R sweater. I'm sorry. Thank you.
An R sweater.
But I cannot speak to you ever again.
That's fine. But Archie Comics is one that has suffered from that. And if you look at Valiant was brought back because there were two guys, I don't know what they were doing. They may have been smoking dope on their bed and said, hey, man, you know, it'd be great. Let's bring back the Valiant universe that collapsed like 10 years ago, because they were fans and they brought it back. And we see, there is change. There are new characters that are introduced. But for the most part, it's still the kind of the same old, same old. And you know, Peter Parker's poor again. Great. Let me see some stories about this. And then as time goes on, if he decides to make his due with money again and wants to be big and powerful, I will read those stories too, because I think there's stories that can be told in all situations. And I'm going to bring this up. I wanted to bring this up on Major Spoilers podcast or somewhere else. But let me see if I can find it real quick. This was an email that was sent in to me about the so this is from Silver Gray. After reading about the DC movie universe deciding not to adhere to a tight continuity, I got to thinking about DC Comics and decided to explain how that continuity works. I had a lot of time in my hands and I was avoiding work. Now, you can apply this to everything. And then I responded to him that maybe a better way that explains this theory. Imagine the DC comic book you're reading as a camera. The main character lives out his or her life, heroic deeds and crazy stuff. In the next issue, however, things change. You're still watching footage from the same camera, only this time it's shifted into a different universe. This explains why your main character conveniently forgets certain details about the last issue or even something that happened 15 issues ago. In fact, it explains why everybody seems to have forgotten it too. World-ending events and destroyed cities are back to normal in the blink of an eye. This also explains why some cities change layout from issue to issue. Non-existing buildings 3 issues ago are suddenly on Main Street. Since microshifts happen within issues, Superman is the best example of this. It's impossible that he can fool so many people into thinking he's Clark Kent. It's possible to fool some people some of the time, but not everyone all the time. It's more possible that every time Clark puts on his glasses, our camera microshifts into a universe where a different set of people know he's Superman, but those relevant to the current story do not. Time distortions also explained by this theory. Our heroine would be 60 years old, but somehow she's a constant state of 20-something. In truth, it's the same heroine, but in a different universe, one where only the events important to the story are compressed within 3 years, and she's been active as a heroine. All those other stories that don't play a part never happened in the universe. And he goes on and on and on and on. It's an interesting theory to look at the constant shifting microverse, and for those people who have heard me talk about the Steins Gate anime series. It talks about that too, where there's this constant shifting of parallel dimensions back and forth to kind of keep things in check, but so many other things change. My response was another way to look at this. Every creator shifts their stories into a universe filtered through their minds and pens and then shares them with the rest of the world. Every creator shifts their stories into a universe filtered through their minds and pens and then shares them with the rest of the world. And I think that's the best way to explain why writers change things, why they want to bring back Hal Jordan, why they want to bring back Barry Allen, why they want to, you know, change this or suddenly have, you know, Clark wearing a different brand of glasses, even though it fits right within, styles, et cetera. But every artist is going to look at something differently, and it's something that's going to happen. And it would be nice if everyone would understand that comics can change and evolve and still tell fun stories if you're willing to embrace a little change.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can see that. I think my biggest problem with the whole thing is not that change doesn't happen or that change gets revamped or that, you know, 50, 60, 70 years into comics that we're seeing stories over and over again. I think what it really comes down to is people who refuse to accept that the other takes are in any way valid. I mean, I feel like for me, Spider-Man as a schlub is played out and tired, and I was actually really kind of psyched about Big Time changing that perception.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's been 4 years. They played with it. They did all their things with it. They've now put those toys back in the box, and we're going to see Peter Parker as a Schmendrick again. And that's legit, I suppose, but it's not something that I'm interested in reading for the 157th time. So, you know, aside from the idea that Spider-Man is mine, and if you're not doing Spider-Man my way, you are bad and wrong.
Right.
I feel like we should be able to say, well, you know, Spider-Man is doing something I'm not into. I'll come back later.
Yeah, and I don't know why people can't
lock
do that.
On to things. You lock on to something and you say, I'm a Spider-Man fan.
Right.
Did you know that, Steven? I'm a Spider-Man
really?
fan. I
would have pegged you
Spider-Man.
For Wolverine.
I will end you. There are Wolverine stories that I like. Yeah. I like all the stuff that they have been doing, even though they won't advertise it or talk about it, and they're about to undo it with X-23 as the all-new Wolverine. I love all the stuff with Laura. I love the fact that they've taken him and used him as this ghostly elder statesman figure for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to bring it back, and, you know, we're going to ruin it all. We're going to turn it all back. But even that is an example of, if it's something where they're doing this, if they're writing this book and it's not for you, that's okay. It's not for you. It doesn't mean that Spider-Man is ruined forever.
Do you think people, and I'm trying to phrase this, do you think people have that approach of, I'm a Spider-Man fan, therefore I have to buy everything Spider-Man. Do you think it's the collector mentality that is forcing that attitude from people?
We have seen in culture, in ways big and small and positive and super negative, people defining themselves not by who they are or how they act, but what they do and what they wear and what they read.
Yeah, that's tribalism.
What they play and what they see, you know, and defining yourself by being a Spider-Man fan or being a gamer or being a Sagittarius, any of those things is perfectly fine up until the point where not being a Spider-Man fan or being a Spider-Man fan who does it differently is wrong and bad, you know?
And that's where the toxicity comes in, is you're not doing comics right.
It comes back around to that gatekeeping. It comes back around to, you know, you and I are Spider-Man dilettantes. We haven't read Spider-Man since Chip Zdarsky's Spectacular number 1 6 months ago.
Yeah.
We are dilettantes, but I'll bet you even money that if we said one thing and let's say a nice young lady who does cosplay at any given convention in her cool Spider-Gwen costume that she put hours and hours of effort into, if she said the same thing that you and I are saying, she might get a different reaction.
Oh, she would totally get a different reaction.
And that, I think, is what it really comes down to. We have too many people who, not necessarily just ownership, but who have these subtle tests and these gates to keep and these things where if Spider-Man's not a schlub, Spider-Man is not right. And if you don't like Spider-Man, then you're not a real fan. You're a bad person and, you know, go away and you're evil. But there's a lot of layers. There's a lot to unpack there. And what it really comes down to for me is when something changes in comics, I usually do the same thing I do at work when there's 35 calls in queue. I put my head down and I focus one thing at a time. And so in this comic, I sit down, I put my head down, and I focus one panel at a time. I had a pretty good time.
Yeah, no, this is fun. This is really fun. And I was going to, before we get out of that section, I wanted to say one more thing about another book that I read that will challenge comic book, quote unquote, fans. And I was trying to find it really quick. It is The Caped Crusade. Oops, sorry. The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture.
Mm.
And it's really good because it really kind of chronicles everything about Batman, but it also chronicles nerd culture and how things have turned super toxic. And why, and really tries to focus on, here are some of the reasons why this has happened. And some of it we've already talked about in this conversation. But you know, if you are someone who's a Batman fan, a diehard Batman fan, this might be something that is really hard for you to, listen and enjoy or read and enjoy, because it is very harsh, in criticism. And this is coming from the writer, Glenn Weldon, is someone who also considers himself a Batman fan, but maybe not hardcore like some people.
He's pretty hardcore. I've seen his work, and he, you know, will make some pretty deep cut references that I'm like, wow, respect.
Yeah. But he's very critical of it. And I think he does a really good job in this book, and people might want to check it out to look and see how nerd culture has come about. And he's using Batman as the lens to look at this, because Batman has been around forever and has had that popularity forever. But it's a really good book. The problem I had with the audio version is every time he makes voices for different people. And so when he's talking about the comic book nerd, he always talks like the, you know, that, and it's just like, that's super annoying.
Annoying. Yeah. When you get Rodrigo.
Yeah, that's really problematic. But so, yeah, I still am constantly struggling every day to deal with a media that we love, and to see such negativity and toxicity come from it. And if people want to see what I'm talking about, just follow Dan Slott on Twitter. I mean, people are just tearing him a new one. Every day about, oh, he's doing this wrong or he's doing that wrong, to the point where you get one group of people saying Peter Parker should be rich and Peter Parker should be poor. And then once he does that, then they both flip and turn on him. And it's just it's awful being a creator. especially of someone of Dan Slott's magnitude. But I think the story here is really well done. I as I said at the beginning of this episode, I like the reset. I think it's cool. I think it's a place where new readers can jump on board and just move forward with it.
Mm. Agreed. And I think that it's not. Yeah, it's not bad.
No.
It's not something that I found any major complaints with. And I like the fact that we're bringing back some of the traditional cast
mm-hmm.
and doing some traditional stuff, but also putting a new spin on it.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean any of the other characters were bad. The little short person who was in the when it was Doc Ock thing. I love that character.
Yeah. Annabelle.
Yeah. Anna and then Maria. The fat guy that was Parker's mentor at the Max, what's his name? I forget what his name was, but he owned the company that then encouraged Peter to go out and do his own company with. So, I enjoyed those. Maybe they'll come back. It doesn't mean they won't, but I'm okay with this kind of change.
Yeah, agreed.
I thought it was a good issue. I like the Eminem art. I thought it was solid. At times his characters get loose, like the Humberto Ramos stuff that I enjoy so much. So I thought it was good top to bottom. Go check it out.
Did you just compare Stuart Eminem to Humberto
Ramos?
At
times, his characters get a little loose.
So what's coming up next week?
Next week, from Dark Horse Comics, we have Department H number 19. We have Halo, Rise of Atriox number 3. We also have Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil number 1. Now, that could be a lot of fun.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. DC Comics is Aquaman number 29, Batman number 33, Batwoman number 8, Nightwing number 31, Super Sons number 9, and Wonder Woman Conan number 2.
Super Sons.
Or Conan, I guess. Wonder Woman's there with a 6-foot-tall redhead guy. IDW Publishing has Bottled trade paperback. Jim and the Holograms Misfits Infinite number 3. ROM First Strike number 1, ROM versus the Transformers Shining Armor number 4, Star Wars Adventures that. Number 3, TMNT Universe number 15. I may actually be able to get it to you right now. Let me look.
Do it.
I'll have to look and see if they've even made it available. It is Thursday, so they may have already. Image Comics has Curse Words number 9, Generation Gone number 4, Invincible 141, Realm number 2, and Spawn Hell on Earth trade paperback for all you Spawn fans out there. Marvel Comics. Again, this is a shorter list, but again, it's not a fifth week next week, so my guess is they haven't updated everything. We'll have a complete list up on Major Spoilers here in a few days. Guardians of the Galaxy, Awesome Mix Digest trade paperback, Invincible Iron Man number 593. You'll notice now that they're starting to put the leg at the end of all the solicitation stuff. That means they're going back to the legacy renumbering. So if it freaks you out suddenly, don't worry. Nothing has changed. Mighty Thor hits issue number 700. Ooh.
No, it doesn't.
Spider-Gwen hits number 25. Venom hits issue 156.
No, it doesn't.
If you go and look at their justifications for it, Venom hits 156.
You know what? I saw their justification for Captain America 600 a few years ago. I didn't buy it then. I don't buy it now.
In all the rest category, we have Assassin's Creed Uprising number 8, Bloodshot Reborn, Deluxe Edition Hardcover Volume 2, a $50 book, Dead of Winter number 3, Dollface number 10, Game of Thrones Clash of Kings number 5, Grumpy Cat and Garfield number 3, yes, Grumpy Cat, Garfield, crossover team up number 3, Jim Butcher's Dresden Files Dogmen number 5, that's the penultimate issue there, Misfit City number 6, Riverdale, the ongoing series, number 7. Rugrats, number 1. Ah, the Rugrats are back, Matthew. Yay. Yay. Torchwood, The Culling, number 1 of 4. Van Helsing versus the Werewolf, number 4. And Z-Nation. It's Z-Nation, Matthew, number 6.
All across Z-Nation.
Next week on Dueling Review...
Invader Zim number 24, the killer virus has a name. Well, not really, but Zim has the name of the guy who put the virus in Jir in the first place, Virus. He also knows where he lives, Cyberflox, the galaxy's largest technology flea market. I like the sound of this. It'll take all of Zim's cunning, intelligence, and subtlety to infiltrate the planet and find Virus, which means Zim is probably going to fail. Fail badly.
You can show your support for this show and everything we do at Major Spoilers by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. You enjoy these discussions, you found some value out of it, you found a little thinking point that'll make you think for the next couple of days until we release a new show, which actually will be in about 24 hours. Then you need to head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Your contribution allows us to keep this show going, as well as all of the shows we produce, and you get a little something back in return. So what are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Thanks so much for checking us out this week on Dueling Review, and we will talk with you next time when you will hear Matthew say,
Paradigm Shift.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.